Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We better get back, as it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Sean.
And We're the only ones on this episode.
It's just us. You're stuck with us. We got no buffer, nothing to water us down. It's just pure Steve and Sean hour. So you better
pure, get unadulterated. Yep. We're just gonna talk about a fucking movie.
No
today,
fucking
guys.
Chasers. No ice cubes. No cooling it down. All right, room temperature. Steve and Sean, straight from the bottle.
Yeah, dude. Put a ice cube in your. And your soup, and it won't be as hot. Sean and I saw, along with Sydney and Chelsea, we saw Nope. Mm-hmm. On the day it came out, June 21st. Technically, it comes out June 22nd, whatever. They always show the movie on Thursday. We saw it in the largest IMAX in the U.S.
It's a
we
big
saw
boy.
It with... We saw it with an intro, but before we go into everything, we're gonna talk about some other things. But this whole episode, the meat of this episode, for anyone listening, you guys are gonna get a lot of Nope. So if you're not ready for Nope talk, go catch up on some other episodes you may have missed. But this is strictly a Nope talk episode. We will be talking spoilers. We're gonna talk about the whole movie. So you better get ready.
I was about to say we're diving full in spoil time, you know, and this is a movie that it's complicated because the way we're approaching this episode, I don't want to give too much of my thoughts away to Steve in this moment. But what I am going to say is you do not want to spoil this movie for yourself. You want to go in completely blind. So we would much rather you listen later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
We feel that way all the time, but particularly about this. So,
yeah, exactly. All right. Before we talk about Nope, there's a number of things that we want to talk about. Was there anything specific that you wanted to talk about, Sean?
Just in general, like news stuff. There's one thing that caught my interest. I believe I read it in a BuzzFeed article. I'm going to get so much better at this. It was either BuzzFeed or Fango. I want to be able to give you guys who exactly wrote it. Though it wasn't a full thing, but apparently, it wasn't actually even an RL, or a, I'm sorry, my brain is all over the place. It was a BuzzFeed article that mentioned another article from another site that I can't cite to you because I'm terrible at my job. But what I can tell you is that RL Stein has basically confirmed rumors of Netflix going into production for Fear Street. And that might be news, or not even news, to some of you guys, but that is a thing that I've heard. Is that a thing you were going to talk about?
It wasn't. I'd forgotten that I saw that. But yeah, I did see that they basically confirmed that Netflix is making more Fear Street stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I I think it's great. It depends on what they do. If you're going to just try to continue going with the same story, then no. But to me, Fear Street, I mean, the nature of Fear Street is all of these different stories happening essentially in the same sort of place. So it's, to me, you can keep making Fear Street movies, shows, spinoffs, as long as the general tone and look is the same, I'm happy. Just don't have like a ton of different people making it so that everything feels different. If you can keep it feeling like it's in the same world, but they're all essentially like, I don't want to, spinoff isn't really the correct word here, but where everything's like a spinoff of each other, where it's not one connected narrative, but it, maybe there's a quick callback to something.
The Fear Street cinematic universe.
Yeah, honestly, but without even, yes, I mean, yes, but without tying it in as much as like Marvel, for instance, where it's still like, I'm down for that personally, and just to just get weird. I think that what they did with the three movies with the trilogy was a ton of fun. I think I said this when we talked about it before, and I'm open to seeing more if it's like those, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if they would bring back Lee Janiak, who was the, I hope I pronounced her name right, but she was the director of this series. I just, my only thing is what they did, I think, for what they were going for was perfect. I think they hit it, hit the nail on the head, got a fucking bullseye with what they were going for. It's a perfect, concise three-episode, your three-installment, whatever, trilogy thing. Jumping between different years and eras, and I just think everything worked out super well. And so for them to be like, well, that worked, let's do something else. Like, I get it. Everything, you know, if something works out, you want to milk it till it's fucking dry. But I just don't want it to, like, sully the amazing thing that they created already.
Sure.
And that's my only, I don't, it's not like even an issue I have with it. It's just like, don't, you know, I hope it's good. Like, I just hope, you know, it's not one of the things where it's like, you know, they're making a fucking Hunger Games prequel. Like, no one is going to really care about Hunger Games anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's another thing you're just trying to milk till it's dead. So Fear Street's very fresh. That's a bad example. But like, you know, you killed it once. And I guess you do have the material to make more. But as long as you keep doing it, and like you just said, as long as you keep making it the same way that you made the originals, hopefully it's good.
Yeah, so I completely agree with what you're saying with most things. I think that my thing is that overall, I love anthology. I love, like, spooky anthology, and, you know, Fear Street is a anthology. It is a spooky anthology book series for teens, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s. And so I think it warrants that, like, in the spirit of it. I agree that they nailed it, and if they stopped here, I'd be happy. But I'm just open to them doing more as long as it feels the same. Because I guess my thing is, it's like the world and the source material, everything allows it. The only thing that would have me worried is that historically, when you look at things like that, what ends up happening is they go, oh, okay, well, we already know that everyone's going to watch it, so we're not going to give it as much of a budget. That way we can up the profits. You know, we bring the budget down a little bit, and we know that it's going to probably gross even more than what the first one did. You know what I mean? Like, they cut corners because they know that it's going to get the views anyway. And that's where I'm like, fuck that. Like, put just as much work, if not more, into this new things that you want to do. Because I would just love to see... It would be so cool if like a new Fear Street thing came out like every couple years and they all kicked ass. And that's possible. And I guess that's where my frustration comes in, is like, you could do that, but they just don't. So I don't know. That's where I am always holding hope that, like, you know, that this generation will get a really solid anthology thing. Because even now, when we're visiting old anthology things like Goosebumps, things like Are You Afraid of the Dark? We are turning them into, you know, miniseries.
Miniseries,
And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but I don't know, I love an anthology thing. I love a world where I can just keep getting new scary stories that are all in the same sort of vibe. I don't know.
Yeah, interconnected. Yeah. No, I mean, I get that for sure. I had forgotten that I saw that, so I'm glad that you brought it up.
Yep.
Was there anything else that you specifically had? I have like four things I feel like we could talk about for a bit.
Did we talk about Orphan last time?
I don't think we talked about Orphan. Yeah, this is the third episode in a row where we went, did we talk about this?
We gotta write this down. We are professional podcast people, quote unquote. Yeah.
I don't remember if we talked about Orphan. If we didn't talk about Orphan,
let's do a quick talk.
I haven't watched the trailer because I'm trying not to. It's cool that Isabel Furman is back, you know, reprising her role in a prequel. It's cool that I've heard that it's mostly practical. Like they've tried to keep her young practically.
Yeah.
Not with the aging, which can be very bad.
Yeah.
Also friend of the show, Chris Dudley did some of the score, which is cool.
Yeah. I don't think we talked about it. This sounds fresh.
We may not have. I'm excited for it. Orphan's cool. The first time you watch it, it's a great, like, you know, first time watch film. It's got a great, I'm not going to spoil it. Spoil it, I guess, for anyone listening. I won't spoil that movie. I'll spoil Nope. But
it's one of those movies that, it's really good and it's actually really eerie. And then by the time you end the movie, it's one of those movies where you're laughing with your friends like, what the fuck did we just watch? I 100%. Dude, the age regression stuff, I think it's really cool that we're exploring that more and more. But we should explore before putting it in our final products a lot, because it does not look good a lot of the time. Even in Stranger Things, I didn't think that Elle's like regression scenes looked great, but they're some of the better that I've seen.
Well, it's also a little different because with hers, it's a young actress with her face comped.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, so it's weird, but like, because de-aging other times will be the actor with just a de-aged face on it, you know? So it's kind of the same, kind of different. I agree. I mean, we'll see what happens. Hopefully the practically done stuff is cool.
Excited for that. You had some stuff.
Yeah. I have a couple of things. Honestly, so three of them are mostly. The first thing that I'll talk about, it's been announced that Skate 4, we're going to talk about Skate.
Let's go.
One of
my favorite games
of all time. Skate 4, so Skate 4 has been announced, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be called Skate. They announced that. They're like, it's just going to be called Skate. And it's going to be free to play. It's going to be a free to play game. So, but I'm curious your thoughts, because now it seems like we have fucking Fortnite. That's a free to play game. Mm-hmm. And it makes so much money from these add-ons that you can purchase that are just cosmetic. Skate's going to be the exact same thing. Skate's going to be a free to play game that will probably have a shit ton of cosmetics that you can get.
Yeah.
I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I think it's all game dependent for me. Let me think about it in terms of
Skate. I guess specifically Skate.
So the idea of being able to buy, as long as they give you plenty of things to start with, that's fun. I think that it works when you give the option of not just pay for, you know, upgrades or cosmetics or to get new levels or things like that. If it can be like, you know, Fortnite works because you can get like the battle pass, for example, and then you have a month plus whatever to do enough things and collect enough points that you can buy your own things and earn things through these challenges. So if it's only that you spend money, I don't like that. And I also don't like any sort of pay to play. Like if you can technically play the game better than me, I don't ever support that, but I could see them doing this the right way. Like maybe if you get a certain number of points or you win enough competitions or whatever, you can earn things. And I'm cool with that. I think it's an interesting way for gaming to go, in the sense that it really does kind of demand your attention. You know, like let's get those guys on. what the fuck are they up to? It's the microtransaction thing is crazy. I actually just saw this small side tangent, but I just saw this. Apparently BMW is working on, did you see this? All right, guys, they're working on a subscription to heated seats And and so they put it in your car and basically they can shut off the service. So it's like $18 a month, however much for the year. But that to me, that is fucking, that's a nightmare. That's like a hellscape. To microtransaction the entire world like that doesn't make any sense. You should be able to buy, have heated seats installed in your car and then have fucking heated seats. Sorry, that was just like a random
hypothetical.
Yeah.
It costs, you live in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Bad example. You live in Michigan.
Yeah.
It costs $5,000 to add heated seats, to get heated seats, right? Just a flat fee.
Sure.
Michigan, you probably don't need heated seats for more than 3 to 4 months a year.
6 months. Need them for 4 for sure. Are you forgetting the hellscape that we grew up in, buddy?
I'm not forgetting, but like, you know, let's say November through, all right, we'll call it 5. November okay. through
I'll
March.
I'll take 4 to 5. March. Yeah.
4 to 5.
Okay.
And it's $12 a month. So that's $60 a year versus paying $5,000.
Well, so I think it's 18. I'm pretty sure that it is 18.
Okay.
But either way.
So that's 100. Call 100.
Is it 5,000 to get heated seats put in?
I don't
car?
Know. I'm throwing a arbitrary number out there. So hypothetically, if that is, do you know what I mean? Like I'm with you. I think it's really weird, but when you think about it like that, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like that's not the worst thing. Like, okay, I don't have to pay for this thing I don't use.
Yeah.
You know, during, and maybe it pays for itself over time. Yeah. I'm sure it does. It's weird. It's a weird way to approach things, but it's the way that we pay for things. What a weird way that we're starting this fucking episode.
Yeah.
If you guys want to listen to us talk about Nope, like hold on to your butts.
Yeah.
You're going to be waiting while we talk
this
about the way that we
guys.
Spend money in America.
This is the world we live in.
Like credit never existed at a point in time, right? Like credit was created, the idea of credit. And so like even now, like you're seeing that you can fucking afterpay for like plane tickets. You know what I mean? And these things in life become more accessible, like Apple.
Yeah.
Apple Pay is amazing. I love Apple Pay, but not even that. Apple just announced a thing where you can buy really anything and pay it off in installments.
Yep. It's
through Apple.
I am recording this episode with you right now on my computer that I have, you know, paid a portion of.
Not even just that. Mm-hmm. Non-Apple things. Like they've made it where like, oh, if you buy this with your Apple card, you can just pay it off over time. You know, because it used to just be Apple products. Same, I'm the same way. I have a bunch of shit that I paid off. It's just it's so crazy. So maybe this is the new wave. It's weird to think about, but
I like it in terms of basically financing things where there's a cap where it's like, this is what this costs and you can either pay it or you can pay in installments. But to me, it just sounds like, at least from the first read, which I could be wrong, but from the first read, it sounds like BMW is going to be like, all of our cars starting from now, this is how heated seats are going to work. And you basically have to do it this way. So if you have the car for a certain amount of time, because I don't think it's like $5,000 to put heated seats in a car. I just think about like auto start, like getting auto start installed in a car is only a couple hundred. So I would imagine that heated seats are maybe a bit more, you know, like so that's where I'm like, if I'm going to have the car for 5 years, you know, and I'm going to go through 5 winters, then I don't know. I think it's a cool thing to have as an option if they cap it at the price of whatever, or if they give it to you as an option. You can either pay for the full thing or you can do installments if you're only going to be with this card for a short amount of time. Basically, I always am pro what is best for the customer and not a business taking advantage of new technology and figuring out how to milk more money from people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This sort of shit is always like they just hope that you continue to pay for it and forget to cancel. Like that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's just the continuation charges. Yeah. Anyways, Skate's going to be free to play.
Yes.
And there's going to be microtransactions. I'm fucking excited.
Dude.
It's going to be, I'm pretty sure it's going to be cross-platform. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's going to be It's fucking sick. Yep. I'm so excited.
I wonder how music licensing is going to work with that. And like, are we going to be purchasing songs? Is it going to basically become like a new, is it going to team up with something like Spotify? Is it like, what is going to happen there? You know? And true. Then
the cool thing about Skate is it's not a game where you like need music in game. Like when I used to play Skate on my Xbox or on my Xbox One, I would pull up because you can have Spotify running in the background while your game audio is also playing. I do that on my PlayStation too. Like, I just will play music from Spotify while I'm skating, you know, hypothetically in this situation. But yeah, I don't know. So that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. We'll go horror non horror. A horror thing that was announced. Yeah. So, Apple announced, and we talked about this on a very earlier episode, that what's the monster universe called? Godzilla's universe.
Monsterverse? Is that just what it's called? Yeah, I guess so. Monsterverse.
I think it's just the Monsterverse. Yeah. But that's coming to Apple, right? Apple's doing a bunch of shows, or they're doing shows that are about the Monsterverse. Which we kind of talked about, like, you know, Godzilla is definitely something that you want on a big screen.
Right.
At least, you know, you can have it on a little screen, but it's cool to watch it on a big screen, which I'm sure we'll talk about more later. They announced that in the show Godzilla and the Titans, which is what it's going to be called, I believe, it's going to have both Kurt Russell, the legend Kurt Russell, and Wyatt Russell, who's his son, and also is in, like, he's the guy from Playtest, from Black Mirror.
Okay.
He's in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Holy shit!
That's Kurt Russell's son. Yeah, right? Crazy. Oh, but then it connects. Yeah.
Dude. Also, I just watched, I got Sangria drunk and watched Escape from New York with Chelsea yesterday. Fell asleep, like, last 15 minutes of the movie. It was a great way to spend an evening, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so that they're going to be in it. I didn't know I needed them in a Godzilla show, but I feel like it's going to be cool. So
fuck it, I'm game, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm down to watch that. I still have my Apple subscription, so it's cool. That was one thing. The other thing, and I know you're not going to watch the trailer, we kind of talked about this before, but the trailer for the new, like the big trailer for the new Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power series.
Yep.
I think it comes out in early September. It dropped. The trailer is like 3.5 minutes long, so it definitely shows you a ton of shit.
Right,
it's going to be a big series. I'm sure it's going to cover a ton.
Yeah.
It looks great. Opposed to the Wheel of Time or whatever that fucking show was that I tried to down while holding my nose. It looks so much better. It honestly looks wonderful. Morfydd Clark, who's Saint Maud in Saint Maud, is Galadriel. Like, she's gonna kill it. It just looks really fucking cool. So if you're into watching trailers, check out the trailer. It's the one that it just came out at San Diego Comic Con. But it looks so cool. I'm very excited for
that. Hell yeah. It's Lord of the Rings is one of, you know, just like Tolkien's universe is something. Like, I've seen everything, but I honestly kind of want to do a rewatch because it's been a minute. It's not one that I've hyper geeked over. But I honestly think I'm more excited for this show than I've ever been. And this is going to be blasphemous probably to a lot of people. I think I'm personally, maybe it's just like where I'm at in my life, I'm more excited for this show than I was for the release of anything else. You know, like any of the movies or anything.
I watched the movies after they had already come out in theaters, for the first time. And so I guess my things with the movies is that they're objectively phenomenal films. They're Oscar award winning films. But they are an adventure story. Like they are an adventure story. They're a wonderfully written and phenomenally filmed adventure story. And there is world building, but it's not like crazy expansive world building. I feel like to the point where, Game of Thrones is, as an example, which is again, a TV show. They're different. And the Hobbit films are fine. I didn't really care that much. They're fine. But I feel like by having this prequel series, you have the ability to really world build, which is, I feel like, kind of what you're talking about. Like, you get to tap into Tolkien and see this world that he, you know, wanted to show you all of, which there's such an expansive universe of.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm all about. Like, I love shit like that. I want that for everything that I love. Well, maybe not everything, but I want that for a lot of the things that I love. Like, I would love to see that with... I would love to see Star Wars that goes... I mean, we're kind of seeing it, but that goes kind of really beyond the narrative of the characters that we've seen. Like, just show me other shit. Not just prequel stuff. I mean, this is a prequel, but I'm so down for, like, a Harry Potter show that goes and talks about shit that has nothing to do with Harry, Dumbledore, Hogwarts, any of that. And just, you
oh, cool.
know what
Fantastic
I mean?
Beasts and Where to Find Them?
No, because it, but you. The thing is, it does. Because
it has Hogwarts, yeah. It has Dumbledore, yeah.
Yeah, just talk you. About a different school, talk about, you know what I mean? Like, it, I'm open to world building. I'm excited about world building is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah, I'm very with you on that. It looks sick. I'm
hell
very
yeah.
excited.
Hell
so
yeah.
It looks like it was just filmed really well. Nice. It just looks cool. The last thing I wanted to mention, which I typed this down a second before we hopped on because I just saw it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Dano is writing The Riddler Year One. It's going to be a 6-issue bimonthly DC Black Label series comic.
Nice. Oh, that is
yeah.
sick.
And
fuck
that's
yeah.
honestly, I don't like collect comics or anything, even though I think I would like to, but it'll be 6 issues. It'll be something easily digestible and like a whole
yeah.
story, and I feel like that would be really cool to get. So.
We live in a tiny New York apartment, and you have a lot of Blu-rays and DVDs. Where are you going to put your comics? I can tell you right now that comics are the biggest pain in the ass, dude. I have like a humble... comic collect
stack.
Yeah, like it's
yeah.
It's a big stack, but it is nothing crazy, but it's a big stack, and you can't set those up right on a shelf, you know, you have to stack them, you have to find boxes,
yeah.
you gotta do whatever, so I have them in like a double bag up on this shelf above my computer, and I'm so afraid, you know, like of anything happening to them, especially my Scotty Young ones, so you're obviously mm-hmm. going to want to get the cases. It's an investment. I support it. I'm very down for you to do it. I just want you to think about the repercussions. The repercussions.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to jump in just yet, mm-hmm. so we'll think about it.
That's fair.
So that's all I got.
Yeah.
Really quick, let's kick it to some this show is sponsored by,
yeah.
and then we'll talk about a movie that we saw.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
And we're fucking back. Thank you. Thank you to our sponsors. Insert sponsor here. I don't know who they put
insert,
in there right now.
Insert whatever name
yeah.
they put in for the show. I have no idea.
But guys, all right. Wow, this is actually hard because Steve proposed an idea to me about how we're going to go about this conversation. So I'm trying my best to keep my thoughts in my brain, which, by the way, we've kind of talked about this in the past. But when we go and see movies, me and Steve will literally go see a movie together. And then we will walk out of that movie and both just like poker face.
Like we're holding in farts.
Dude, straight up, like not, like don't even look at each other. You might look at each other and be like you want to say something. And then you're like, nope, I got to shut the fuck up. Yep.
Yeah.
And just trying to not give our thoughts away until we get onto the show. Because we think that the best conversations happen during those initial, what did you think? But
yeah.
But so... we went and saw Nope, And Steve, mm-hmm. so we're well, I guess that part doesn't matter. But we got our tickets a minute ago. Steve, a couple weeks ago. And when we got them, they were just normal tickets. They were just normal movie theater tickets in New York City. Not a big deal.
Well, but what theater though?
Well, okay, okay, you're right. In the I thought it was, earlier you said the biggest IMAX in America. Isn't it is it not the biggest in the world?
I think it's just the biggest in America. Oh. One is bigger, it's like just a dick swinging contest, like a couple feet or something.
Yeah, where
it's
they
not
add
like
an
something
inch.
Is like twice that size. Yeah, right. You know, like I don't know how big it is, but it's fucking huge. It's the biggest one in America for sure. I know that.
It's a big one. But either way, so we're excited to go see it. And then a few days ago, or about a week ago, Chelsea, put that song in. Let it run, Ali. About a week ago, week and a half ago, Steve was like, yo, guess what? And he gave me some news, and I'm going to let Steve tell you the news about our tickets that we had already purchased.
We bought these tickets, and I got an email from AMC saying, hey, just a heads up, before your guys' movie at 7:30, Jordan Peele's going to come out and do a quick intro for you guys.
What the fucking fuck?
Yeah, and they're like, just so you know, it's going to be at 7:15. Your movie's at 7:30. We're you know, if you want to get seated, get here at 6:45, whatever. So, yeah, we went there with the expectation to see Jordan Peele, you know, just talk really quickly about his film. Pick it back up.
Well, so we get there and we find out it's not just Jordan Peele. It's Jordan and it's Kiki Palmer. And she's kind of, you know, they're both speaking, but she's kind of like interviewing him and asking questions. And and dude, it was just so cool to be in the same space as him. We were
really like, it was funny how close we were too. We had seats that were like in the lower middle and almost all the way to the left in this theater. And this theater is humongous. And I don't think there's a bad seat in it. Mm-hmm. They were in the very front left. So we were like five rows removed from Kiki and Jordan.
I was about to say, maybe 15 feet, 20 feet. Like,
It's compact enough.
And so you can clearly see them, and, no one's blocking. I'm short. No one's blocking my head. Like, dude, there was someone right in the middle, but I could see Kiki right here and Jordan on the other side.
Nice.
And dude, it was perfect. And you could just tell how stoked he was to, you know, about this movie and just about his life and someone, you know, his career right now and what he's doing and the art that he's making. And you can tell that he really loves the genre. Just from the credits of the movie, you can tell that he's the type of person that appreciates every single person that works on
collaboration.
Like credits like I've never seen before. When you see the movie, sit through the whole credits. It was just awesome to be in the same space as him. I fangirled a little bit, and by a little bit I mean I might have peed kinda.
And the other thing that I do want to talk about some specific things that they said, but we'll talk about it when we talk about the whole film. But one thing, I mean, near the end he was giving like a final statement sort of thing, and he was talking about how much it meant for this film to be shown at the specific theater. Like the Lincoln Center AMC is a very specific, cool theater, and he was talking about how he, you know, it's a theater that he would go to and see films in IMAX when he was younger, and just for it to be, you know, the film where this is showing at, he talks about how this film was made for IMAX. We'll talk about that more. And he got choked up, and like that is so, it's so inspirational to me to see someone that's that amazing at filmmaking to be that human, and to know like it's something that's so achievable. It's something that's so like, not that it's easy, but like it's, you know, this is just another dude who loves making what he loves, and like
absolutely,
it means just as much for him to see people watch it as it does for you to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was getting emotional. I was like, that is amazing to see that side of him.
100%.
Which is really cool.
100%. Can I also say, he's got some salt and pepper going on in the hair, dude. Yeah. Dude, yeah. Jordan's looking
good,
guys.
He's got the steez. He's got a steez going on. Absolutely.
100%. Dude, he I feel like he's going in full mad, and I mean this in the highest complimentary way that I could say it, but he's going like full mad horror director is what I'm seeing in his face. Just like, he's an artist. And, dude.
Yeah.
He's looking good, guys. He's looking good.
Yeah. I agree. So we want to talk about Nope again. We're going to go into spoilers. We got to delve into this movie and break it down. This is honestly going to be a longer episode than I thought it was, but that's fine. Yeah. I proposed something to Sean because we want to figure out how we want to talk about movies. Like, obviously we want to break them down a little bit and have it be more than just like, what did you think? But like, Sean and I know each other very well, and we know what each other likes. So my idea that I had, and we can try it for Nope and see if it works, but I thought that we could each say what we think the other person thought. So I could be like, I think Sean liked the movie because of X, Y, and Z, and maybe just list a couple things. Nothing, well, we won't go in depth, but then the other person will respond and say, yeah, this is how I felt about it. Here's a couple of things that I loved about it. And then we'll break down those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you guys? Yeah.
Well, we can't hear them. Yeah, exactly.
I want Chelsea put in a Sesame Street, all the kids going, yeah!
I love that we, during our episodes, we're just going to have our instructions to Chelsea. Yeah. Chelsea, leave these in when you're listening. Absolutely leave these in. Also, shout out to Chelsea. She's editing our, she's a part of the Mostly Horror team. Yep. Absolutely. Whoop, whoop.
Yep,
putting these episodes together.
Throw in an ICP whoop there, Chelsea.
Throw in a whoop whoop. who do you want me to go first? Do you want you to go first?
You go first. I don't know. Should I, what do you? You go first.
I'll go first as an example. Okay. So, I think you liked it. At what level, I don't know, but I do think you enjoyed it, and I think you enjoyed it. Very, you know, specifically. And again, we're going full spoilers here. If you don't want to hear spoilers for Nope, fucking pause this episode. I think that you are a big fan of the creature design. I think that's a big part. I think the creature design's a big part. I think the creature itself is a big part. And I think that you, I think you liked seeing it in IMAX. I think you liked the experience of the film itself. But yeah, those two things I think were integral to you enjoying it. Do you think you should respond right now, or do you think you should?
I don't.
Say what
I think I should just jump into you. I hear what you're saying. Mind. I'm absorbing.
Absolutely.
It. Yeah. Absolutely. But I'm doing my best.
Keep smiling.
Not to react.
Yeah. I'm gonna keep smiling so you don't know.
So I, to be honest, it's really interesting because I do feel that that we have a pretty good idea of what the other one is into. With this movie, I think, especially yesterday, I was like, I wonder what Steve did think. I was like, I think that he liked it. I don't know that I would say that it's his favorite of the three. But I think he enjoyed it. I feel like the cinematography is something he appreciated. The performances, the interesting decisions that they made, like changing aspect ratios, things like that. Just sort of like these film decisions that they made. I felt that you kind of got a kick out of them and thought they were interesting and trying to pick apart why he made the decisions that he made. And I don't know, maybe like maybe you appreciated the balances between the scary moments and the comedy. I think those are the things that stood out to you the most. So I'm going to say that I think that you enjoyed it a lot, but I think that it's either your second or your third favorite of his three like horror movies.
Okay.
All right.
Let it rip, dude. What'd you think? What'd you
think, Sean? Bro, I fucking loved it. I loved it. I loved it. It's my favorite of his movies. It is.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And I know that's bold. I love Get Out. I really like Us. But for me, it goes this movie, Get Out, Us. I thought it was, and you know what's funny is I thought I was going to like this the least, which is wild because I love me some Aimlians. I was really curious to see his take on that, without, I'm going to give you the gist before we start kind of breaking stuff down. Yeah. But the direction that they took it, which truly was not what I was expecting at all, and honestly isn't anything I've seen before, was amazing, where it basically went from a very interesting take of one kind of movie that we're all familiar with to a very interesting take of another kind of movie that we're all, you know, very familiar with. Obviously, in very different directions. I'm going to say Alien movie, and then small spoiler into our conversation here, but monster movie. I just think that he understands so many things, and he knows how to fuse things together in so many different ways. It was so funny, dude. I've said it a million times before. We've talked about it. I am pretty desensitized at this point. This movie scared me. My heart was pounding at its, not through the whole time, but I was definitely stressed throughout the movie. And then there were moments that I was like, that is horrifying. And I'll touch
on
that.
Let's bookmark that. Yeah. Yes. Well, I definitely want to know more about that.
But everything that I said that I thought you would like about it are things that I love. I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought the performances were amazing. Keke Palmer, holy shit, you know? The sound choices that they made, the use of sound in this movie was fucking insane. I loved it, and I want to see it again. And I can't stress enough that this is a movie you please, guys, if you can at all. Obviously, if you feel safe COVID-wise, be safe. Know your area, know the people around you, but if you can go see it in theaters, go see it in theaters. Go see it in the biggest fucking theater you can find.
Yeah, in an IMAX, in a Dolby Vision, and in a something, pay the extra money.
Yeah, but what did you think, man?
It's very funny. I think we're on the same page.
I
really enjoyed it, and honestly, so I've been trying to think of where it sits, right? Like the biggest thing for me is, where does this movie sit for him?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's my favorite Jordan Peele movie. I don't, this is so weird and it's stupid and pretentious of me to say, I don't think it's his best movie. I think Get Out is his best movie. I think it's groundbreaking, and I feel like it changed cinema. Like, I feel like it's a film that is like a groundbreaking staple and like, mark in the sand in cinema history, where things changed after
Absolutely.
It. And I feel like saying it's going to be hard for him to top that in terms of like Jordan Peele's best movie. Like, that is, I feel like he made his opus as his first movie, which is fucking crazy. But this was my favorite one. And I think you agree with me that he has made three great movies. So ranking them is just an arbitrary thing that we're doing.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that this is his Jaws. Like, it feels like Jordan Peele's Jaws. You know what I mean? It's so different, but so similar at the same time. And there's so many things I loved about it. The scale of the movie is otherworldly, huh?
Yeah.
It's such a big movie. While having not that big of a cast, any other big blockbuster that you're going to see, any fucking Marvel movie that you're going to see is going to have 18 characters that they're balancing and like 18 different storylines, and they're juggling a bunch of shit. This movie had three main players. It maybe at one time had four people or five people kind of doing main shit in a scene, but it really had three main players. I mean, we could say two, even Keke and oh fuck, why am I forgetting his name?
We're OJ, so focused regardless. On
OJ and Emerald are the two main characters. Like, I would say that Angel is a third main character in the sense that he contributes a lot for the majority of the movie, but they do so much with having two main characters, which I feel like you rarely see, especially in like a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fucking kick ass middle of July. Go see this in theaters blockbuster. I mean, from a very general standpoint, I think it's my favorite of his three movies. I think it's wonderful. I think that Get Out is still his best.
Sure.
And I wouldn't fault anyone for saying, like, I liked Get Out more. I don't think you're going to see a lot of people say that they liked Us more. Again, I think Us is a great movie, but I think you'll see this sitting at number two in his films in, like, the public opinion. But, yeah, man. And, like, seeing it in that theater.
Yeah.
Just Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, it was so hard to not talk about it because I was just, like, blown. And you hit the nail on the head with the cinematography and, like, the skill in filmmaking behind making this movie. I guess we'll break down this one thing as I'm talking about it. But Jordan Peele talked about the DP, the cinematographer of the film. Hoyte van Hoytema is the name of the DP. This guy did Interstellar. This guy did Dunkirk. He did, oh my God. He did Interstellar. He did a couple of Christopher Nolan movies. I think that he did Let the Right One In. I think that's the one that broke him.
Oh.
Like, he was doing a bunch of films, like, where he's from in, like, Sweden, in the Swedish area.
Yeah.
But he did, like, Tenet, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Ad Astra, Her. You know, like, he's a
clearly
fucking
great
artist.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let the Right One In was his one that, like, broke him into American cinema. But, I just thought, like, the way that they shot it, the way that every time for the first two-thirds of the movie, every time you saw, we'll call it the saucer, it was chasing it kind of how you would if you were holding a camera. You know, you can't quite catch it. You see it, and then it's gone.
Yep.
But the film movement, the way that they lit and graded all the characters, like the way that they looked, the way that they every scene was its own, like, feel, you know what I mean? Like the rain scene, the one where the saucer's straight over the house and the rain is just coming down on the car, like, that is, it was so visceral to me, and it felt, I could feel the barrier of rain, like, it was in front of me in the theater. Like, it was just so well shot, so well planned out. And yeah, I just, it's one thing to see a movie that you enjoy, but another thing to see a movie and be, like, just in awe of how it looks and how it was, like, crafted.
Yes.
I think it's just such a well-crafted movie, top to bottom.
100%. So one thing, it goes along with everything that you're saying, but I would say that their ability to juggle so many different things and understand exactly, I can't imagine that they figured out this movie while they were making it. I'm sure that, like, aspects of that are true, but it just is such a complete vision, and that's one of the things that just impressed me the most. Is a lot of the times I don't love, like, even when I think comedy is done well in horror, for example, it feels like you have a scene that's funny and then a scene that's scary, and they feel like two completely different things. But this, it was all unified, like, and that's everything from the writing, but also how they filmed it. Like, it didn't change the mood of things. You would be laughing while still afraid, you know, for a lot of it. Like, in the moment when it's right over the truck and he's like, nope. You know what I mean? Like, it's a funny moment, but at the same time, your stomach is in your asshole. Like, you're terrified. And I don't know how to explain it. They just, every visual decision that they made, every sound decision that they made, every acting decision that they made, went perfectly in creating this, like, one unified vision. Their use of the space that they were in, whether it be location or what they were doing, like, with visual effects, the scale of it, I feel like even if I didn't see it in a theater, though I'm sure that that was a big part of it, they just did a really good job of making you feel how open the space was and how big this thing was in terms of how the environment was, like, reacting around them, from, like, the clouds to where it was, to things like the rain and stuff. Like, does that make sense? Like, it felt massive to me, and that made it scarier.
That was the whole thing with the house scene. The house and the rain scene is perfect because they do that. It's like filmmaking 101. Like, they're giving you hints, and it's informing your knowledge of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, Emerald is looking out the window and seeing that the rain starts, you know, 10 feet away from the house. And that's how it is all around, and you're like, oh, this is literally this humongous thing over this already big house, and you're it's just adding to your info. It's perfect use of film language to like show you to like fuel your imagination and the information that you have.
Yes.
It's fantastic. Yeah, the craft is so good. Do you have something that you want to say? It seems like it.
We have to if we're unless you have something else you want to touch on this.
No, let's next thing.
Let's talk about the fucking monster. Let's dive into it because okay, so this movie starts again. If you're listening to this, like we shouldn't even have to give you a synopsis of what the movie is because you should be sitting here going, "Yep, yep," because you saw it and you know what we're talking about. This fucking movie makes you think. Like for the majority of the movie, at least like the first half of the movie, you're seeing a ship. You're seeing a flying saucer ship, and you're wondering, when are we gonna see the aliens inside? Are we gonna see the aliens inside? What are they like? Like, what is happening? When people get sucked in, like, what direction is he gonna go with this? And that's where I kind of didn't know if I was even going to get any actual horror from this movie. And that's why I was surprised, actually, quick, whatever, when he was speaking before we saw the movie, he looked at everybody. He was like, this is a really fucked up film. He's like, I like freaking people out. He's like, I like fucking with people's heads. And he was like, this movie, what did he say? He's like, this movie is something fucked. It was, I really liked the way he worded it. Damn it. The way he worded it. It'll come to me, but like massively fucked or something like that. But, and when he said that, I was like, really? Like what? I wasn't expecting that. But it goes from being this flying saucer movie and these people that are watching this ship around their house to being like, no, dude, it's not a ship. This is a kaiju movie. Like, this is a kaiju movie. It's not a ship. It's a giant, it seems like not even something from another planet, but something from another dimension. It felt almost mist-like, whatever, but it's this giant disc with this like mouth that it suction things up, which by the way, oh dude, before I even knew it was a monster, the way that it beams people, and not beams people up, but the way that it lifts people up,
it like starts a tornado. Yeah,
I every time I've ever seen it, it's always been like a laser beam. It's always been technology that like levitates people.
Yeah.
So when I saw that it was like, no, it's moving the air.
Yeah.
I was like, that is the coolest way that I've ever seen an abduction happen, ever. Like, cooler than anything I've ever seen. And then you find out later that it's because it's literally sucking people into itself. It's like this giant, multidimensional jellyfish, almost.
Yes. Absolute jellyfish is the perfect...
Yes.
It's what I was going to call it. Yep.
Yes. So there's a scene, I mean, you guys have seen it, there's a scene where it goes through this crowd of people and it sucks everyone up, and to me, that is the scariest part of the whole movie, is when it absorbs them into it, and then you get to see the inside of it, and these people are screaming, and they're stuck in almost what seems like a tight, like, balloon space, and then you realize, like, holy shit, it's going to decompose, or it's going to, like, absorb them there, it's going to break them down and decompose them, and just, like...
Yeah. Yeah. It suffocates. It seems like it like suffocates them. Like it squeezes them so hard that kind of like what you said. Like it absorbs them and releases whatever is left. Sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because did you see it where she like looked up and it almost looked like somebody else's like flesh was like there? I'm assuming that it probably kills them by suffocating and squishing, and then there's like liquid that probably breaks them down over time. And he didn't go full, you know, John Carpenter, Lovecraftian, you know, anything like that. But he hinted that that's what it was if he decided to show it. And dude, it was terrifying. And also, he must have taken some inspiration from Annihilation, because the screaming, when this thing flies above you, you can hear the sounds. At first, you didn't understand what it was, but as you go, you can hear the sounds of the people screaming inside. And it's not just that you can hear them from where you are, it's that it like
it's like projecting
it's projecting it back as it moves. It's making it louder. Fucking terrifying, because the screams change as different people and more people get sucked in, and it's Jesus, what did you think? Sorry, I went on
that's why you hear. No, I absolutely, of course I want to hear what you think about the monster. Yeah, I mean, that's why you hear the horse at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I guess I want to tie it. I'll tie it in after. The creature's so cool.
Yeah.
The moment that you're talking about when Steven Yeun and everyone gets sucked up, the 40 plus people, whatever. That's like the paradigm shift in that movie. That's where the, Jordan Peele doesn't wait for you to find that out or figure that out. He tells you. He's like, this is what's going on inside of this thing. And I mean, I agree with everything that you've said. I love the way it abducts people. I love the idea of it. I also like, we'll talk about this with the creature. I like that this film is a lot about kind of like Mother Nature, like the instability of living things, you know, because the whole Gordy subplot, which we can talk about, is that it's just a reflection of what you're seeing. It's the instability of an animal. So I loved that, you know, the whole thing was don't look it in the eye and don't look right at it. Don't intimidate it like that. And maybe it's being scared and like is attacking people for that reason. Yeah. Or maybe it, you know, wants to hold its ground. It's trying to be territorial and it sees you looking at it and goes after you. I thought it was phenomenal. I'm very curious what you thought about its, you know, final perfect form. Cell form. It's so unlike anything I've ever seen, and it's I fucking love how they do it. So you have this, I am getting goosebumps thinking about how fucking perfect the reveal is. But there's this whole concoction. It's the final act. It's you know, them trying to defeat the monster. And in doing it, they fuck it up a little bit, and it starts chasing them. It starts chasing almost every character. It kills the DP that climbs up on the hill, who I loved his character. It tries to go after Angel, who is very smart and keeps himself safe. And then it goes after Kiki and Daniel Kaluuya. And while it's doing that, going after Emerald and OJ, it starts to... I'll say unravel. And it basically is like an oyster that opens up fully. Vertically. But it has it looks like fucking there's a Pokemon that it looked like. And I forgot to prep it before so there are Pokemon in Sun and Moon. They're called Ultra Beasts. And I'm gonna tell you about the Ultra Beasts while I find out which fucking Ultra Beast it looks like. There's a jellyfish Ultra Beast, and it's called UB01. I don't know if you can see my phone. Adjust.
Yeah.
So it's like a jellyfish, but it has like, I don't know, but it also, it was like, it was flat. Like it was this flapping sheet in the wind. And then it had this mouth that came out, but the mouth was like, it had these like fucking whoosh, like it was like whipping colorful shit at you. And I just like, what a you went from the big bad is a flying saucer to it's a monster to it's not just a monster, it's a fucking Ultra Beast Pokemon that's the size of a 12-story building. Like,
right. That's why I was saying it almost at a certain point, especially once that happened, once it opened like that, it stopped feeling even like alien and more in the sense of like from another world and more like from another fucking dimension. Like it's almost like biblically accurate angel.
This
sort
is
of
a
stuff.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, again, and then inspiration from deep sea creatures and jellyfish that do really change their shape like that depending on what they're doing. It also kind of reminded me, you haven't finished it, but I feel like you'll probably know what I'm talking about.
Ocean at the End of the Lane.
And I don't want to spoil, but yes, Ocean at the End of the fucking Lane.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It felt like the thing.
Yes.
The moment it started doing the shit, Sean, I was like, it's Ocean. Absolutely.
Yes, dude. It was so, and I loved how organic and free it was, while at the same time being like hard-lined and geometric. Like it was both, you know.
It had a very square
yes.
fucking mouth thing.
It was cool. It's good creature design, man. It's just good yeah. creature. I'm very curious who the, like, who the team was that did that, who the lead artist was, whose design they went. I would love to talk to some of those people.
That should be the goal. Let's figure that out.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
I want to know inspiration. I want to know yep. the entire fucking backstory for that. Yes, for the, yes. For the jellyfish.
Oh, my God.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Relating to the monster, we talked about sound design. You I think you mentioned it. I really liked the sound design. I liked, you're talking about the screaming and the echoing of the people that it's digested or whatever, or the things it's digested. But the noise of the monster itself made, so two things. One, it made it have almost a, it made it be able to express emotions, like it was its own character. So like there's moments where, you know, someone makes a decision and it like kind of clicks like a but it's like a it's like a response almost, and it makes it feel almost like human character, like it's responding to these things that are happening. On the flip side of things, I feel like a lot of big monsters in movies have very similar, like we've found like a, this is what strange monsters sound like big kaiju-esque monsters sound like. I'm not talking about like roars and shit. Those obviously have their own noises. But I mean, this felt like the same noises that like the monster in Super 8 makes. It felt very similar to the Super 8 monster's noises. It felt similar to, in that, you know, monster is very similar to Clove from Cloverfield. It just, you're, I don't know. I guess you don't, you're making up what you think this thing sounds like, and how do you know? And it's not going to talk fucking English, but like,
yeah.
That was the one thing where I'm just like, it seems strange that we've just decided that this is these are the parameters of the monster language that we have, if that makes sense.
Sure. Well, so I think there's a few...
Not in a bad way either, but just, just a notice. I think I noticed.
Absolutely. I think that there's a few reasons for that. I think you're right. But I think that, A, we didn't just... I think we reached those conclusions based on a few things. Like, when you think about, like, the size of something like that, I think that there's probably... And I'm not a sound scientist by any means, but I think it makes sense that once, like, as the scale of something gets bigger, the sound that it makes and the way, like, our ability to interpret it is probably, like, it probably muddies, you know what I mean? Like, that is a lot of, like, vibration to happen at once. So I think that's part of where that comes from. And then also just, like, what we know about what is familiar to us, what sounds are familiar to us, and what tones and different things make us uncomfortable. They're going to use those just like they do with everything else. Every time they write any horror score, like, you know, a lot of ghost movie scores are going to sound somewhat similar, touch on the same sorts of things.
Yeah, I think
that
absolutely.
They probably touch into that. And then just the zeitgeist of, like, knowing that, well, this is what people associate it with. So I will say I agree with you that it's still in that world, but it didn't feel like, at no point was I sitting there being like, I personally wasn't like, oh, this just sounds like everything else, because I was so swept up in it. And the other sound design from the movie set the mood enough where this creature was one of a kind in this one of a kind world. You know what I mean? Like, I just got completely lost in it. So I need to watch it again, though, and I want to, like, really pay attention to the monster sounds now that you said that.
I want
to
watch it as soon as I can, to be honest with you.
100%. Yeah, I'm going to see it in theaters at least one more time, if not a couple more times. So, yeah, it's fucking great, man. I don't even know. I have sat here just thinking about it nonstop since we've seen it, to be honest with you. I just think it was fucking great, dude. The monster was cool as shit. That bit was cool as shit when he opened up and did the whole thing. I'm trying to think of other things I want to say about the monster, man. Truly, again, well, actually, I'm going to say this. It really was, I have to re-stress that that scene, when they get pulled up and they start doing the digestive stuff, is one of the scariest things that I've seen in a minute. That, and when, and I'll guess maybe we can segue this into the, I don't remember the name of the monkey, but the monkey part, maybe we can use this to get in there, but that was Gordy. That was such an intense part of that movie, and that's where also my stomach was just sinking and sinking. But I just have to credit this movie to, like, I watch a lot of horror movies, man. I've been watching tons of horror movies for 19 plus years, and this movie got me. This movie had me afraid. It changed my blood pressure, and I can't, dude, I cannot thank Jordan Peele enough for it. It was delightful. Yeah. It was delightful to be sitting there, like, afraid.
Yeah.
So,
I definitely agree. So jumping to Gordy, right? So we kind of talk about, there's a lot of themes, but one of them is, you know, again, kind of Mother Nature, kind of animals and their instability is kind of like a through line that they connect with Gordy, who's this monkey, who you guys saw the movie, you know the part we're talking about. Rest in peace to my fucking boy. I think that is genuinely realistic and fucking terrifying. And I like that, you know, his trigger was the balloon popping. I like that the balloon popping was crazy foreshadowing. When you think about
I didn't even piece that together until right now.
Yep. Shit. I like the Gordy through line. I was like, I wonder where this came from. I honestly wonder if he had the Gordy idea before he had the idea for the main story. I wonder if that's kind of what sparked it. And he was like, what if we took this concept and multiply it by a bajillion? I loved what they did with it. I thought the monkey looked really cool. I would be so apprehensive. Jordan Peele's got buku bucks, so I'm sure they can make it look like however they want to make it. That was true. That was that may have been the part where my heart was pounding the most. Was during Gordy's scene. I'll be honest with you. This movie didn't really scare me, which it doesn't have to for it to be a good movie, obviously. But it definitely, similar to Jaws, it's a movie that has great moments of tension. It has a couple earned jump scares. It just plays with the audience. It plays with the fucking audience the whole time. And the Gordy scene is a great example. A quick question that I wanted to ask you, because I've been curious about it myself, and it's related to the Gordy scene. Do you have any idea why the one shoe is standing up by itself?
No. I didn't. It's funny because I could tell that it was like an important thing to note.
It's like a focal point.
Yeah, but I was like, he's not going to explain it. So yeah, I really don't know. I think it's just kind of one of those things, like maybe, or just like the odds of something, or the maybe it's talking about the chance, like chance or something. I don't know. Because, all right, because you want to talk about themes. So it's the whole movie. I mean, it's a horse ranch where they break horses. They train horses. Breaking their spirit. So you're taking a wild animal and you're training it to be something that it is naturally not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what our main characters do. And then yeah, you have this Gordy bit where you have this television show where they bring on a wild animal that they have trained to be something that it is not. And then the overarching whatever of the movie is just man. And so in both those situations, it's man dealing with the predator, or dealing with, you know, animal, dealing with like a wild thing and how to interact with it. And then you have this monster thing, which I don't know what to call it, this alien. And I don't know, I've been trying to figure out exactly what connection he's making there between like man's interactions with things, the idea of like, of imposing our, I don't know how to explain it, like man versus this wild thing, exploiting things, trying to control things you can't control. Like, I really don't know exactly what he was trying to say, but it felt like every little thing was a part of this message, like the odds of something going wrong that one time or something. Or
yeah.
Like you well, know what the, I mean?
The capturing of something is so important. Like, you know, the reason that these horses are broken is for films, so they can be filmed. Yeah. The reason that Gordy is trained is because Gordy needs to be filmed. They see this UFO, which is also a monster, and their big thing is, how can we film it? Which obviously makes sense. Because I would want to film one too. But he's making a statement to me that like not everything needs to be captured, not everything needs to be recorded or held for posterity. Even the DP, the cinematographer in the movie, is cycling through, you know, documentary film that I'm assuming he's shot of wild animals, of an anaconda eating a lion, of random shit. You know what I mean? And it's all about the taming and the capturing being via video or photography of these wild things, and whether or not it's worth it, because they tried just capturing this big monster on video. That's all they want to do, and it becomes a life or death situation. You know, and it's I think that's like a big through line. Go ahead.
Well, the shoe. So you're talking about the shoe being like this. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's any any significance in the fact that like, out of everything that was falling in the sky, it just so happened to be a quarter, a small little quarter that just so happened to land exactly in his dad's like head. You know what I mean? Is that? Do you think like the shoe and that could be like along the same lines?
I don't know. I think that. So here's my take on the shoe. Either A, it's just a cool focal point thing that he just wanted to do. Either he wanted you to think about it or whatever. Because even Steven Yeun's character, who I can't remember for the life of me right now the name of the character, has the shoe framed. The shoe is framed. And it's in the same spot. Yeah. Or there's the saying, waiting for the last shoe to drop, or waiting for the final shoe to drop, which you literally are doing.
That's You're wondering fair. What.
And I don't, I haven't thought and processed that enough. But that is the other thought in my head. Just because it connects, you know what I mean? So that's where I'm at.
Can I just say that the character that I have the most sympathy for in the whole fucking movie is that girl, that's his like co-host, his sister on the show, because she gets attacked by a chimpanzee that eats her face and her body, and she, you know, obviously that's a painful and traumatic experience. She survives it, goes the rest of her life like dealing with the scars and the pain and the, you know, the insecurity and everything of that. And then just to get eaten by a fucking alien disc jellyfish boy in the sky.
Yeah.
What a shit run, dude. Like what a fucking dude. Like, not fair, man.
I agree.
Like, unfair.
So two things two. I have three final thing kind of things I want to talk about. One is big. Two of them are smaller. Two small things. So the first thing that we didn't talk about while we were talking about our intro, but Jordan Peele quoted Jim Henson, which I thought was really interesting. And I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought that was really cool. Obviously, he's going to be a fan because Jordan Peele's the shit. But I just thought it was cool that he obviously has a love for Jim Henson and the Henson Company.
Yes, I was going to say it wasn't just that he quoted Jim Henson. It was that he was talking about where like his writing process came from, like the creative process, like different stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking about how Jim Henson. Oh, he was talking about collaboration. He was talking about collaboration. He was saying that Jim Henson is one of the greatest collaborators and just artist of all time. And like, fucking thank you. Can we push? Do you think Jordan Peele can make it so that we can get Dark Crystal reinstated? Like, what the absolute dick, dude? Who do I gotta? Steve, send a tweet. You're good at that. Because fuck,
I'll
man.
I'll tweet, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was super cool. It was as soon as he said that, I lit up, man.
That just made me remind of another thing. Another small thing to point out. Did you see the name Osgood Perkins in the credits list? It's one of the first like 10 names in the credits.
No, I didn't. Okay. I know this, but they don't know this. You tell them.
Osgood Perkins also goes by Oz Perkins. In this movie, he plays a like actress's assistant or something like that. Oz Perkins is we'll start with the smaller thing. He's the director of The Black Coat's Daughter. He's the director of the Hansel and Gretel, or it was called Gretel and Hansel movie. He's also the son of Anthony Perkins, aka Norman Bates from Psycho.
And they didn't get along as much as you might think, because a boy's best friend is his mother.
it's a crazy horror lineage there. It's obvious that they're friends, that he would be in this movie, because I don't think Oz has a bunch of like acting roles. He was funny in this film, which was cool. He was a good comedic relief, a piece of levity in this movie. I just thought that was cool that Oz Perkins was in this.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
The other thing that I want to... There's so many things, dude. This is a thing that I saw. Did you notice Kiki Palmer's Acura slide right at the end there?
Yeah, dude. Holy shit. Of course I did. It was so... I mean, so many things reference that. There are literally countless animated, like, shows that literally just rotoscope that animation and put their own characters on it. But, that was 100% intentional. Like, a clear Akira Akira reference.
Yes.
Loved that. Loved that.
It was...
The dude behind me. Did you hear the guy hyped behind me when he went, Akira? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you didn't hear him? It was so sick. He was just like, Akira. No. And I was like, yeah.
It happened and I got fucking psyched. But then also, so that's like near the very end of the movie. I've also never seen that done.
Yeah.
I've never seen that homaged in a live action thing. I was showing Sydney a gif of like, it's just a super cut of a bunch of what you were just talking about, a bunch of animated things doing it. I've never seen it in a live action film. But... that was super cool. Also, so that's near the end of the movie. And the end of the movie made me realize that this is thematically or you know, with the way that the story is told. This is a Western, all right? Don't shoot the messenger. Yeah. This movie's a fucking Western. It's about a man and his family trying to protect where they live. There are a number of, and this is set in the desert in California, there are a number of Westerns that follow the same format of this film. And not only that, we talk about the Akira homage, the end two shots of Emerald, Kiki Palmer's character, staring out and smiling and looking out towards the camera, and it cutting to fucking Daniel Kaluuya, OJ, on a horse, perfectly framed. Yeah. Like, there's saloon doors. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. It's perfect.
Yep.
It's literally, well, if that movie had gone on for longer, I wouldn't have liked it as much as I did. Like, not the whole movie, but like, I thought that ending was like,
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, the first thing that they show, you see a bit of it, and then they obviously reference it narratively later, but the whole, you know, technically the first film that was ever shot was a black man riding a horse that we can't credit. Like, we don't know who he is because racism, you know? And I just thought that was fucking brilliant. Like, his ability to pick these concepts and ideas and run them together, like, the way that his brain fuses things together, it's fucking insane,
It's excellence in writing. It is just excellent ability to write. But let's bring this all back to where it started.
Okay.
The marketing for Jordan Peele's movies is so cool.
Yeah.
It's just, and like, maybe Jordan Peele's not the one who comes up with this stuff. It may not be. Honestly, I don't know if it is. So if it's the marketing team, fucking shout out to the marketing team from Monkey Paw and Universal and whoever does it. But the initial image of a cloud with like a kite ribbon coming out of it, and you're just like, how does this connect? And you still don't even, it didn't really hit for me until like 20 or 30 minutes into the movie. And so it's just like, and then there's the other poster of like a floating horse and then random pocket debris around it. Like, and they did the same thing with Us, they did the same thing with Get Out. I just love how they market his movies, and also how I don't think I'm gonna watch the trailer for his fourth one. Like, I really want the full experience, and I watched the first,
no idea, no teaser, no nothing.
I want a poster.
Fair.
And that's it, you know?
Fair.
And like, and I was pleasantly surprised with everything that I saw, but like, the trailer that I saw showed a lot of very important moments. But even with that, you know, they show the fist bump of the monkey paw, right? And in my head, I'm like, are these aliens, monkey aliens? They show the woman that you talked about from the TV show who had her lips ripped off and her veil coming off. And you're like, is this an alien? They show a bunch of shit. They show the plushies of the fake aliens, whatever. And you're like, is this what they look like? And like, no, all this shit was misdirection. They were just little sprinklings in the story. But like, what, again, like, excellence is like literally the only word I can think of. Like, excellence in craft, excellence in writing, excellence in marketing. Like, what a fucking great movie.
Could not agree more. And specifically about the poster, dude, I want the poster of the horse so bad. It's one of my, like, favorite posters, I think, that I've seen just in general. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Obviously, we avoided, you know, the trailers. I definitely didn't see, like, the last couple. I'm pretty sure I only ever saw the teaser. But I did hear that a lot of people were thinking that the most recent, you know, trailers had given away or were giving away a lot. So, but I think at that point, you know, that's just things that big executive people make you do.
Yeah.
Like, right near the end.
It's just how marketing goes.
Yeah.
Sean and I love Nope. You guys heard it here first. Sean, Sean and I love Nope. Yeah, me too.
I thought you said Sean, I loved Nope, but that's not what you said. All right. We did.
Before we let them go, Sean, final thoughts on the teaser for Oppenheimer that we saw before the movie.
For Oppenheimer, one second. Remind me which one that is, because I have so much Nope in my head. What one's Oppenheimer?
It was the teaser. It's the Christopher Nolan teaser that they showed right before the movie with Cillian Murphy.
Oh, holy shit! Yeah. That's all that I have to say is what the fuck even stoked on it. Like beyond ready to see what the hell that's about.
It comes out a year from today or yesterday.
I do not want to wait. It looks dark. Film.
It's about the atomic bomb. It's gonna be fucking dark.
Yeah, it's just like shit, you know.
Yeah.
I had to
be cool.
Piece. I honestly forgot that that trailer even happened because Nope just took over everything.
Because you were sucked in.
I'm remembering it as we go. Like, holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. That teaser came on right before. We didn't get any other trailers.
Yeah. Nope.
But yeah. Well, listen, guys. We loved this movie. Go watch it in an IMAX screen if you're able to. As always, thank you guys immensely for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Mostly Horror, Instagram at Mostly Horror Movie Night. Listen to these episodes a week early on Wondery Plus and Amazon Music, and listen to us regular on Spotify, Apple, blah, 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 blah. Leave some reviews, send us some emails, send us a DM, a tweet, of whatever the fuck.
Talk to us.
And we'll catch you guys next week.
Goodbye.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.